And once Kaz heard that I was looking for people, she rang me and said, please, can I talk as well? Because I love being at the front talking. But she said, oh, okay, I will.
Chris knows that I really don't like doing this sort of thing. Never mind.
But we love hearing you.
Yeah, thanks.
Don't we? We love hearing you. So.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. So we've had an Essex girl.
Yeah.
We've had a Geordie boy. And who have we got here? Tell us about where you were born and grew up and your early years.
I'm a Bristolian.
Oh, my love.
So, yeah, born and bred in Bristol. And lived there till I was 18 when I went to uni. So I have a younger sister, although I feel like she's my older sister, and very serious and organised and all the things I am not, and a mum and a dad. My mum was a very forceful creature, or still is. She's a very dominant figure in my life for a long time, still is. She took us to church. So me and my sister went to church in Bristol.
She'd have liked that song, Get Yourself to Church.
She'd have loved that. Yeah. Yes, she'd have loved that song. So she took us to a place called Christchurch in Clifton in Bristol. And that was probably my most formative years when I was younger. So I probably started going when I was about 8. Because my mum was a Christian, I always believed that there was God. I never questioned it. I still don't. I've never had a moment where I haven't believed in God. There have been things where I've been sad and things in the past that have caused me to think about stuff, but I've never not believed there's a God. I went to an amazing youth group in Christchurch called Meeting Point, and it was there that I learned a lot about the Bible, about who God said I was, who God said other people were, what was right, what was wrong. I was quite black and white in my younger years. I think I've become a lot more grey since I've got old.
It happens to us all.
Yeah. Our youth group went to Soul Survivor quite a lot, so I can remember being amongst lots and lots of people, and it was the Matt Redman and the Martin Smith era, so Delirious and all of those guys, and I loved my music, and I still do, and I just got caught up in all of that sort of stuff, and I just loved it all. And I can remember, you know, quite a few times, I don't know if anyone else has done this, but inviting the Lord into my life many times, just in case. Just in case I hadn't made it clear last time that I want to be, you know, I want to be a Christian and to invite my God into my life.
You could have been left behind otherwise. Well, you know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I had a lovely Christian life, I suppose. And a lot of support. It was the time where we had accountability partners. I don't know if any of you had them. I had a prayer partner in my school. So we would get together and we would pray about things and hold one another accountable.
My word, this sounds serious stuff.
I've never had one since, but when I was 16 to 18, I did. So yes, it was a lovely period of time. I think everything was very black and white. So I believe what I believed, and then other things that people told me were wrong. And I didn't really look into them myself. I didn't question what people told me. If somebody said that was wrong,
it was handed to you.
Yes. Okay. On the other side of my life, I went to an all-girls school. I don't know if anyone else has been to an all-girls school, but they are. I can't think of the word without swearing, so I just won't say it.
Not positive, I take it.
Not positive. I loved my friends, but I got bullied a lot at school from the age of 9 up to 18 when I left school. So that had a real detriment to my character. So I've always been, well, you might not believe it, but I'm very self-conscious, and I'm not great at putting myself forward. I can be very quiet and I can be very anxious. So the whole bullying side of things has stayed with me. When I went to university, I thrived on being away from my parents and started doing some not great things. So I lived with anorexia for well, from 18 till 30. So that shaped my life quite significantly. Okay. For the worse, but also for the best as well. So I guess I have a knowledge of how destructive that can be. But I also, in those times, felt God with me the most that I ever have. So I can remember looking at myself in the mirror and crying over the way that I looked, and remembering then some things that God has said to me, you know, when I was a little girl and I learnt all those Bible verses, and I would look in the mirror and I would talk over myself. Mm. And I would sing over myself. And even though I didn't believe them at the time, I just kept looking at myself and saying, "You are a child of God, you are loved," and quoting Bible scriptures over myself. And I think that's why I have a love of music and worship music in particular, because I used to play my worship music over and over again to try and instill that in me to counteract all the other things that I was feeling. So
it's a bit like Steve was saying about seeds being planted,
yeah,
sometimes.
Completely.
And you don't even always understand what has been planted in you,
yeah,
but a truth that, yeah, you don't even know whether you believe.
Yeah.
But it's there somewhere,
but it's
because
there somewhere.
It was planted in. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a very shaping, you know, time, even though it was the worst time. And anyone that's gone through any eating disorder or anxiety issues or anything just knows how, desperate it is. But at the same time, I feel like that was the time when I knew God most. And I heard him speaking to me audibly.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So you met Chris during this period?
Yes, I met him at uni. So I was 18 when I met him. He was studying medicine.
And what were you studying?
I was I was studying theology. Don't ask me anything. I know nothing. I could probably translate the John's Gospel from Greek into English. Well, I could have done. I can't do it now.
It's quite a useful skill, isn't it?
Yeah, know? I was learning theology at the time. And he was doing medicine. And we met outside a church in Nottingham.
But you didn't move on to become a theologian?
No. I don't think I would have made a very good theologian.
So what did you do?
I finished my degree and then decided I didn't want to do that at all, like you do. And I went to do a degree in occupational therapy.
So you've got two degrees?
I've got two degrees.
Ooh.
I know. I'm so clever. So I did two degrees, and I did my last degree in Derby. And so Chris was still in Nottingham at the time because medicine was 6 years. So we went out for that period of time, and then when I was doing my finals and he was doing his junior house officer year, we got married then and lived in Nottingham.
You just didn't want him in education for 6 years.
No.
And you only three. So you thought, I'll do two degrees.
Yeah, I did.
And then you've arrived in Swansea. Why?
Well, that wasn't really the plan. The plan was that we were going to grow old and grey and then move to Swansea. But it didn't quite work out like that. So Chris is from Pennard, and when I started going out with him, I used to come and visit him in Pennard, and I used to drive across the Severn Bridge, and as soon as I saw the Wales sign, randomly, I was like, oh, I'm home, which is really strange feeling for somebody who was born in England. So I always felt that was a bit strange, thinking that Wales was my home, and you know, I didn't really have any links to Wales. Chris was desperate to be a consultant in Swansea because that's where he grew up. And they always say about can't take the boy out of Swansea and all that, which is very true. But he worked in many, many different places in England. We moved to New Zealand for a year. We worked in New Zealand for a year, which was amazing. And we always had this dream in our mind that we were going to retire and come to Swansea in retirement. But suddenly, somebody left from Morrison Hospital, a paediatrician, which is what Chris does, and he had an interview and he got the job. And it was all very surprising, because then we had to move to Swansea. But from the moment that I moved here, I felt like this was home. So we've moved around. I think we've moved 12 times in the last 19, nearly 20 years.
That's impressive. 12 times. Impressive.
Yeah, I've moved 12 times. But Swansea's always felt like home, and specifically where I live in Bishopston, that's just felt like home to me, that community there. I feel very peaceful there, and I feel like that's where I'm meant to be.
So you mentioned earlier about things always seeming black and white.
Yes.
and a faith that was handed to you.
Yeah.
Does that still feel true now?
No, I would say.
You mentioned feeling greyer?
Things are very grey.
Can you explain that?
I think there's a lot of colour in grey. I know that sounds really odd.
There are 50 shades, apparently.
There are 50 shades of grey. If you hadn't said it, I would.
I've been told that. I've been told.
Yes. So I feel like a lot of my life was spent listening to people telling me things from the Bible that they believed. And I don't feel that I did a huge amount of work myself looking at what actually I would read for myself. And so there are many issues that very much were black and white for me. And I would say only within the last 5 years, bearing in mind I'm 43, in the last 5 years, I have started thinking, oh, maybe it's not right. Maybe I haven't got it right. And I probably know less now than I did before. But I feel almost at peace with that. I feel that I don't need to know the answers. I still believe in God. I still believe, you know, I have a God who loves me wholeheartedly, who is for people, who is gracious and who is loving. And I don't feel uncomfortable about not knowing the answers to things. You know, I've had people that we've prayed for healing and really believed that they are going to be healed, and they've died. And I question why, but it doesn't make me not believe in God. Mm. I still believe he's there. I don't get why that happened. So it has to be grey, I think. And I think there's lots of other things like that that I was taught to believe that actually I don't believe in reality now, as my life is and as experience has taught me.
I think Steve's phrase was good, isn't it? Well, about growing up in God, some of letting go of those certainties that are become our security. As we grow, we're able to let go of some of that and not knowing, and that is maybe part of that. But the question about what have you found on your faith journey, what have you found to be one of the biggest challenges, and what have you found to be one of the biggest encouragements?
So, can I do the encouragement first?
You can.
Thanks. So, I'm very holy because I've come out with a Bible verse.
She was one up on YouTube.
So this is one of the Bible verses that I've held very close to me since I was 18 and since, you know, going through all my issues. And it's from Zephaniah, and it says, "The Lord your God is among you. He is mighty to save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing." And I love the last bit because obviously you guys know I love to sing, and I love the idea that Jesus sings over me. I think that's just wonderful. The things I find inspiring are people, Christians and non-Christians. I know a lot of, the majority of the friends that I have outside of church are not Christians. But people specifically that I would say are inspiring to me, people like Rachel and Helen, and people that I've worked with to bring God to people. I feel like somebody once sang over me in Soul Survivor, so that must have been like when I was 16, "Rise up, women of the truth, stand and sing to broken hearts." And I feel like that's what God's asked me to do in my life, is stand and sing to broken hearts. Mm. And I've been in that broken place. And I know that there's hope, and I know that there's light, and I know that God can. And so I find that inspiring. I find people inspiring who are every day choosing to get up and stand and sing to people who are brokenhearted. And then that's like what I believe we need to be. So I find that inspiring. I find music inspiring, not just worship music, but any type of music, really. And I find my children inspiring.
Wow. Good.
Yeah. So a long time ago, I was told I couldn't have kids because of what I did to my body over 12 years. And I have two beautiful children.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Thank you, Kaz. A round of applause. Thank you. Thank you to the three of you. I love the fact that when we peel back the surface impressions, we realise that we're very similar, aren't we? We go through stuff, we wrestle with things, there's moments of uncertainty, moments of real challenge, questions. This is not a faith that is all about ticking the boxes and always getting it right. And there's so many different routes and pathways. I love the image of the river. That's what we're in. We're in a river and we're being taken by the life of that river. And that river is the Spirit of God himself. And he takes us and moves us. And I think one of the things is when times are challenging and tough, one of the questions is, well, where do we turn? Where do we look? And I guess for some people, faith becomes something that's too much of a struggle, and they look away from that and walk away. I've always felt for me that faith and belief in Jesus is the lens through which I see the world. You know, I remember somebody telling me once, well, you should think differently. You should sort of walk away from that, try other things. And I think, I don't know how to do that because it's the glasses. Well, not even the glasses, because you can take glasses off, but it's the lens over my life that has developed, and how I view people, the world, the past, the present, the future. It's how I see it. It isn't always comfortable. It isn't always easy, but it is something that brings light and life and understanding and hope, I believe. And sharing stories, as we have this morning, hopefully reminds us that his work in us isn't something that's relegated to the pages of a book, but it is very much the nitty-gritty of our lives. And whatever you are this morning, or whatever's going on, whether that's visible on the surface or not, probably not for most of us. It's under the surface. And whatever is under the surface, he knows, and as Kaz said, he loves us and is passionate for us. And it is inspiring, isn't it, to spend time together and just think, wow, look at us. Just a bunch, what a bunch of people we are. With not it all sorted, and some of us facing big challenges at the moment. But he's for us. Amen. Julie, back to you.